pulls you through those moments of panic and doubt?
You know, I think it has taken a long time. I really have learned to rely on the community I have around me. And I had never really done that before. I just kind of powered through that I can do this. I don't need anyone. I can do this myself. I think we all want to feel like we're putting our best foot forward every day, feel complete at night when we go to bed. And I think, you know, for a long time, performance was very narrow. It's taken Olympic athlete pretty good at getting that Olympian on the podium. But what happened when they came off the podium? I think all of those things just made me realize there is a conversation here that needs to be had.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths. And today is the second episode of the Business Athlete edition of the podcast. And today I'm featuring an incredible woman who I've become friends with recently, Jen Wagner, CEO of Prosper. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's awesome to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad. So, folks, I always tell you how I know my guests. And so Tony Schiller is a mutual dear friend to both of us. And so Tony introduced us because I think he saw a synergy in our backgrounds as athletes and our focus on wanting to impact optimal performance and impact performance across the board, really. And so, folks, as I mentioned, Jen is CEO of Prosper, which focuses on holistic women's performance. And Jen, I have to say, when Tony told me about you and then I saw your materials, I was just blown away by what you're doing. It's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a kind of a windy road to get here. And, you know, Tony's amazing. I met Tony almost a year and a half ago now. And we just quickly bonded over kind of this next phase of our life. He was going through a transition. I was going through a transition. And just really what we wanted these next phases of life to be. And he's given me a lot of support and courage to kind of pursue this new entity, this new beginning with Prosper and kind of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, I know. He is so awesome and so generous with his time and introductions and attention. And I value that so much. And when you're talking about you both going through this change, I want to zero in on the change that you've been going through. So folks, I introduced Jen, but I purposely skipped over the fact that this amazing woman has over 20 years of experience in the medical space, in the performance space, and not only just experience, but Jen, tell us about that. You have been part of faculty in school at Stanford Medicine and an OR resident, is that right? Or an OR doctor?
Yes.
So tell us.
Yeah, so grew up being an athlete, went to school as a Division I soccer player at Clemson, and just kind of knew from the time I was 10 I wanted to be a physician. So that was kind of the road I was on, straight and narrow. This was my goal. So after college, I got a master's in exercise physiology and then went to medical school and then went to residency and fellowship at Stanford in specialized in pediatric anesthesia. And then stayed on faculty there for a little over 8 years. And then we moved to Utah and I worked at the University of Utah and then became the director of perioperative services at Shriners Hospital for Children here in Salt Lake. So yeah, I spent most of my medical career in kind of high acuity operating rooms and then doing a lot of administration in those roles too, and a lot of coordination.
That's incredible. So you don't do anything just a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes I wish I could, but that's just not the nature.
You and I were talking about that earlier. It just sounds way we're wired somehow. So
yeah,
I get it, and I so appreciate it. So you've made this switch, and it's been pretty recent. So talk to us a little bit before we get into what Prosper is.
Yeah,
talk to us about like that switch. I mean, it's a really brave thing to do.
Yeah, so a little over 2 years ago, the hospital system I was working in underwent kind of a big model change. And I had made some very coordinated decisions to when we left California. It was for really to try to have a few more boundaries put in place than what I felt like I could establish there and to be able I have two teenage daughters to spend some more time at home. They were younger when we moved here, but to be able to be a little more present in their lives and just be a little more present in my own life. And so I had found a really nice balance in medicine and things were going really well. And then this kind of, all of a sudden, this model change came and it was okay. But it was really, it was probably exactly what I needed. I had been thinking about leaving clinical medicine for a while just to find a different way to help people. I can feel a little stagnated by the healthcare system. And so it had been something that had been in the back of my mind. And this was kind of the push I needed, because it was either go do something else or go into a healthcare system that I actively had chosen to leave. And kind of all those boundaries would have just been torn down. And I would have been back to not being home, not being present in other realms of my life. And so, yeah, so I was really, I'm really grateful. I was surrounded by a lot of really wonderful, helpful people, and ended up becoming a partner at a group called the Liminal Collective, which is one of the preeminent human performance groups in the country, or maybe even in the world. And I've just spent the last couple years with this team and learning and getting to really develop a skill set that I hadn't gotten to use for a while. And then combining that with my medical knowledge, it's just been an awesome couple years, but challenging. I mean, definitely not without moments of panic and doubt, for sure. So,
yeah. And what do you think pulls you through that? I'm asking you this. Well, I'll pause there. What do you think pulls you through those moments of panic and doubt?
You know, I think it has taken a long time. I really have learned to rely on the community I have around me and the teams I have around me and the support I have. And I had never really done that before. I just kind of powered through that I can do this. I don't need anyone. I can do this myself, et cetera, kind of in every realm of our lives. You know, my husband and I were adamant we didn't want to live in childcare. We were both physicians. We both had young kids. And so we just lived this crazy life for so long because we could do it and we didn't need help. And so that had been kind of hardwired into me. And I think it was a really humbling experience to say, I can't do this. Like, I can't make this transition on my own. I need to reach out to other people. And I actually need to have the confidence to ask them for what I need, because even those early conversations with a lot of really supportive people, I was afraid to say, this is what I need. And finally, when I got that courage and had that opportunity, it really opened a lot of doors and helped me move forward in a way that I didn't realize was available. But I think it does, you know, I think people need to be able to say, no one can read your mind. And so you need to say, my friends were helping me to try to find these really big jobs and new positions, and it was awesome. But I was like, I just need someone to say yes.
Yeah.
And so I was out walking one day, and one of the partners at Liminal was like, well, why don't you come hang out with us? He's like, I didn't ever offer that because I thought you were looking for something different. I'm like, I would love to come and hang out, you know? And so I think just being willing to say, this is actually what I need, and this is where I'd like to be, really is powerful for people that are trying to transition into something new.
Yeah, it's such a great takeaway. Thank you so much. I think it really can be hard to sometimes get those words out of your mouth. And I think there's an element of not having practiced literally getting those words out, and how do I literally say it? But then there's also, I think some people can have that fear, or they're anticipating what somebody's reaction can be. And so for me, I think one thing that's key about that is, one, the practicing of it, even if you're saying it to yourself in the mirror and realizing that it's going to be kind of hard in those first times, but also really trying to disconnect that what we're saying and what we're asking for and what someone's reaction will be. Because I think, you know, we might get a no, or we might get someone saying like, well, why would you do that, and guessing us and all that. But if we're really feel strongly about what we're doing, again, there has to be a little bit of being able to turn off kind of like what our anticipation is at others, anticipating other people supporting us or not. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. For sure. And I think I think most people really do want to be supportive and do want to be helpful. And I think it, you know, I think people, you know, that's a way we feel good. And and whether it's, you know, having a mutual friend introduce me to an amazing human who I would have never probably met, or it's saying, you know what, I don't need this this crazy consulting job. I want to go in and I want to learn and I want to help people and I want to have a chance to reset. And so it's like, I think, you know, especially if you are having a big career transition after a successful career, people kind of think you're always wanting to go up or into something higher. And that may not be true. It may be, it may be a different kind of challenge or a different kind of work that you want to do. And so I think that just being able to clearly communicate that to the people around you that want to help you, it can, is a super powerful thing. And just being comfortable, being a little bit vulnerable, which has been hard. I've been definitely been a learning curve, but I think it is reinforceable. You know, you ask for help once and people give it and they feel really good about it. And then also people are much more willing to turn around and say, oh, can you help me with this? And it becomes this very mutually beneficial relationship, I think.
Yeah. There's like there's an intentionality, I think, that comes across in what you're saying is like, again, when you're voicing that, be really intentional about what you're saying and how you're asking, and then being intentional about that reciprocation can be really helpful in that arena as well.
For sure.
Yeah. So talk to us about, because I know you mentioned this is in the work that you did with Liminal, but talk to us about performance and then how that how you transitioned it to women's holistic performance in Prosper.
Yeah. So, you know, I think the word performance is often, I shouldn't say misunderstood, but I think it can be defined in so many different ways. And I know after being an athlete and having a degree in exercise physiology, like performance was very much about athletics and kind of what went into performing on a field or on a track or in a pool or whatever the arena was. And so it was interesting. And then I went away from that world for a long time. And coming back into that world, I was like, oh, I don't know what this is. And it was really interesting to spend the last couple of years with Liminal really broadening the definition of what the word performance meant in our world. And it really just meant being optimal, being optimized in whatever arena you function in. And whether that's a boardroom or on a court or in a school or at home. I think we all want to feel good in the morning when we get up and feel like we're putting our best foot forward every day and feel complete at night when we go to bed. And to me, that's what performance is. It doesn't mean you have to be the best at what you're doing. You know, I think performing does not always equal excellence. Like, that's different. And so I think I've been challenged a lot about using the word performance, and because many people say it's unapproachable or it's intimidating or I am not an athlete or I am not a performer. And so I think, you know, we've worked pretty hard at Prosper to define what we mean by that. And really kind of what we've come up with is it's optimizing our physical, mental, social, and emotional factors to really empower women to be their best selves and live their best lives.
And
it's really not more, I mean, it's complicated to do it, but it really is just about how can we live the life we want to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just going to lean in there for two things. And one is like, I hear what you mean about sometimes people not really, maybe it's like the word doesn't really resonate with them, that performance element. But I think that first of all, I think when I talk about the business athlete, I think that like everybody has potential there around that. And it's about the traits, not about physical performance. It's about what things that, you know, to your point, you're striving to operate at your best in all areas to be kind of well nurtured in all areas, so you can be the best for yourself, but that also allows you to be the best for others. And I think that if we actually step back, we all do air quotes athletic things. So, you know, that's the connection that I draw with that. And I couldn't agree with you more about like the holistic nature of that. Because I think we can get too channeled as I'm an executive or I'm a parent or I'm a, you know, in these siloed areas mm-hmm. that often leave certain elements of ourselves neglected.
Right. And I see, you know, for a long time, performance was very narrow. And so, you know, let's take an Olympic athlete. We're pretty good at getting that Olympian on the podium.
Yeah.
But what happened when they came off the podium? Like their lives fell apart because they could perform in such a narrow focus. And right. So most of us, most of the general population is, we have to perform in all of these different arenas all the time. You know, it's like my kids expect me to be on, my teammates expect me to be on, you know, even the people I show up and work out with every day, they expect me to be on. And so it's like, I need to have enough bandwidth that I can handle all of that, which may mean I have to take a little from one to give to another at times, but I need to understand those relationships instead of just being so tunnel vision all the time. And so I think that is why it's actually really important to use the word performance, because we all need to do it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I was so taken with when I was looking at your materials that you had, you know, shared with me was the element that you talk about women being asked to succeed and perform at an optimal level in all these areas, to educate, to nurture, to succeed, to all of this. And what you wrote, or what the words said, was that you're expected to do that in an environment that's been created for men by men. And that literally the words that say that makes no sense. I was like, oh, it brought like such a level like relatability to that. So speak to us about that, if you would.
Can let you know, I think as I get older and have more and more gray hair, I am taking a lot more time to reflect back on like the different phases of my life. And, you know, I was kind of from the start, I grew up in a very progressive family, incredibly supportive. I was told from the get-go I could do anything I wanted to do. I had an older brother. I was told I could do anything he did, to the point I was given balls and trucks and things like that as a girl. Like, I never wore a dress. I never, you know, any of those things. And that was great. That was my mom's way of showing me that. I now wish it had been a little more balanced, but there are no regrets there. And so, but I just kind of noticed that for a lot of times we teach our girls and young women to get ahead, you have to be like the guys. You have to be better than the guys. But you almost like have to morph into that mentality to get ahead. So it's like you do have to get into this like mindset and environment that is for men, designed by men. And then I went through athletics and, you know, I was super fortunate. I was about 20-year Title IX-ish and women's soccer was exploding, you know. And I went and played soccer in college, and our gear was what was left over from the football team. And I was so thankful just to be there. And if someone gave us a practice t-shirt, it was great. But we turned around, and it's hilarious, you know, years later when I got married, my husband brings out this shirt and he's like, why do you have your ex-boyfriend's stuff here? And I was like, oh, that's my practice gear. And he's like, it fits me at 6'2", 200 pounds. I'm like, yeah, that's what I had to wear, you know? And so it's like, there still wasn't anything for us. Like, we had the opportunity to play. We are grateful.
Yeah.
And then fast forward, like, through all of my education, like, most medical research is based on men. Because women are complicated. You know, even I read a stat yesterday that 6% of sports performance research is focused on women. 6%. So 94% is still either androgynous or focused on men. Well, I mean, that's 2023. And so, you know, it still continues. And so, and then when I was in the last couple of years with Liminal, we just didn't really address things that were specific to women. We never asked the question. And
like,
how are you doing in this corporate environment? How are you doing in this athletic environment? How are you doing in this military environment? Like, what do you need specifically.
Yeah.
To be your best self. To reach your
goal. Yeah.
And is your organization meeting that? Is it culturally meeting that? And if not, how can we ask the questions and shift the paradigms a little bit to make these environments? And, you know, I had two kids in residency and fellowship, and the expectation was I came exactly back into the working environment that I left.
And
if I needed to do things, I had to fit them into the schedule that was prearranged. There was no adjusting. There was no flexibility. And it wasn't really for the men either. Like, I shouldn't say that this is just a female problem. I think men don't know how to ask for help. You know, there are many men who are single parents or many men who serve as caregivers. And if we don't start having these conversations about what do you need, not just expecting that these environments work for all, it's really hard. And I think, you know, the pandemic changed a lot. And I think people are starting to have these conversations more. But I think for women, we have just been expected to work in these environments that have been designed by and for a more prototypical male lifestyle, where these other, and I think some of these even our thought process, you know, I laugh, you know, about married to a man and his ability to like do one thing and then do the next thing and not think about either is incredible. And sometimes I'm super jealous of that. But the expectations are different. You know, we had the same, it was really interesting because we had the same career, we're the same specialty, and his experience and my experience were vastly different. We trained in the same institutions. And so it was a really kind of great, almost experiment. I was like, does this happen to you? He's like, no. Like, do you get asked these questions? Yeah. Like, do people help you? Yeah. I'm like, oh, they don't help me. Okay. It was just super, super interesting, right? And even as recently as a couple years ago, I'm like, how often do the kids call you at the beginning of your day when you're trying to like get patients in the OR? Never. No. He's like, they call you? I'm like, every day. And so it's just interesting, even like how, you know, cultural. I never tried kids to call me. They just chose me, not him. You know, it's just interesting. So I think all of those things just made me realize there is a conversation here that needs to be had. There is some education here that needs to be shared. And we just need to start hearing these stories and building this community to slowly start having the conversations, making awareness to the issues, so then we can start to help to change things and move things forward.
Yeah, yeah. It makes so much sense what you're saying. And it's, I love the fact that you have basically been like an experiment. But I mean, what a fascinating, like just topic and the way that you both, again, you must experience things so differently. But it really does help you to see that there can be a coexistence, I think. And that's actually part of what I think the biggest challenge has been, is this fear of loss or encroaching, or if, you know, one side gives up one, or it's like the coexistence is what I hope that becomes part of the education on the large scale.
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's great research and data about when you have different types of diversity on teams, how much more effective those teams are. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's great data that the more women you have on a team, the more effective your team is, the better they perform. And if we just expand, so it's like, it's not one or the other. We need to figure out how to incorporate diversity of thought, diversity of race and ethnicity, mm-hmm. diversity of gender, all of those things, because we all come with a different set of experiences and a different way of approaching problems. And there's huge synergy there. And I think when people are so afraid of giving up or having a different viewpoint, that we lose that amazing ability to actually really accelerate progress. But, you know, recently, even on my own team, they're like, oh, we didn't ask you to come to this event because we thought you'd be busy with the kids. And I was like, oh, every other person on this team has kids the same age as mine. I just happen to be the only woman. Like, why? Oh. Like, if you don't want me to come because you don't think I can contribute, no problem.
Yeah.
We don't think you have the right skill set for this project. No problem.
Right.
But don't tell me that.
No.
You know?
Or that makes me a function of that.
Right. Right. So, So, I mean, I think it, and again, there was no ill will meant in it. It wasn't meant to be derogatory, right. But I was like, okay, this is a learning moment. Like, and I said, yeah. I said, you know, you can say you don't want me to come up or be involved in this project for professional reasons, but don't assume it's because actually I'm a relationship. Like, I can say no. I'm an adult. I know how to prioritize what I need to do.
And I said,
I did that thing. I don't ask you those questions. So it's interesting. Like, I think it's still just kind of in the back of people's minds, and then it comes through, and it's not meant to be an intentionally demeaning,
right?
But it's still there. And so I have tried to provide, first of all, take a deep breath and not get angry, and then kind of provide a little feedback saying, hey, listen, I appreciate your concern for my situation. I can say no if I have other obligations, but if this is a professional environment, then I would prefer to be treated that way. And if you don't think I need to be involved in something on a professional level because I don't meet the requirements, or maybe it's not the right situation, that's great. But let's not go to those other places.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because earlier when we were just talking in the show, we were talking about learning to ask for help, get those words out, and not necessarily being attached to what someone's response would be. And I think this is another example of learning how to speak up for ourselves, learning how to use our voices in a way that a little bit, again, detaches from what someone's response is going to be. Because to your point, there's an education there. There's a learning moment to be had. And it's part of, I think, changing the landscape. So to your point, I love what you said, like, hold on a minute, let me take a breath and not get angry. And then be able to say what you need to say, where it's just like, hey, this is my experience with what you just said, and this is what I'm asking for instead. And again, like, doing that is brave. Doing that, we have to learn how to do that. I've definitely had to learn how to use my voice. And sometimes that does mean being detaching necessarily how someone on the other end is going to receive that. But if that positive intention is there, then I think that that's part of the journey.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there are great allies in this journey. You know, I think Tony's the perfect example, right? So supportive, so inclusive, and very genuine with that support and inclusivity. Really want to help great people do great things. And so... And like you mentioned earlier, is super generous with his network and things of that nature. But I really do think it is about, and this is, and I'll get back to answering your question about what Prosper is about. But a big portion of Prosper is to say, how do we create allyship? And I think that is bringing along the men and other individuals who have been really involved in creating this journey, really supportive of the mission of what we're trying to do. And a lot of it has been encouraging them to ask questions about what they don't understand. Because just like all of us, if we haven't been in that situation, we kind of don't necessarily understand even how little things create a culture where we don't feel comfortable asking for help, or we don't feel comfortable asking for what we need, etc. Because we've had all of these little micro conversations or suggestions that prevent us from doing that. And so I really think that we hope to create a space where men want to be just involved in our training as women, because they want to learn. You know, they want to learn, whether it's advance their workplace, whether it's to advance their life at home, whether it's to better understand maybe their daughters, you know, any reason, or, you know, even their clientele. I think, you know, when we look at the sports world, the most of front office and coaching and performance staff in women's sports are still made up by men. And so if we can help normalize a lot of these conversations, so the men feel comfortable asking questions like, how is this affecting you? I don't understand. Can we have a conversation? And I mean, that's been a really powerful part of Prosper, to create that dialogue and to create that safe space where you can come in and ask a question if you don't understand. Like, we're not assuming that anyone knows how to do this. We're figuring it out. It's never been done. We're trying to figure it out. And so figuring out together and moving forward is just going to accelerate the pace at which we can, you know, make some change.
Yeah, totally. And I love what you said there about that conscious work to bring men into it, because I just really think that it can't be, again, that we were saying earlier, the us versus them, the, you know, polar lanes. And, you know, having that conversation together, I think, is what makes such a difference. And I mean, to your point also, I read this book a while ago, and it was about introverts. But when I was sharing it, I was saying, I think that it doesn't matter if you're an introvert or an extrovert. I think that there's so much to be learned about this, and you know, maybe other people within your friends or your circle fall into this category and things like that. So I think when you were saying that, it just brought that back to me. It's the same kind of a thing where it's like, you know, learning about how to help women in this area, or how women are feeling in this area, is not just for women to know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just think that's really key.
Yeah, I do too. And, you know, I've been asked, even one of my business partners, her husband said, I just don't get it. And I said, okay, well, let's just talk about it. Like, I appreciate that challenge and I appreciate that question, because you've lived in an environment where you've never been exposed to it, right? You're different. And so I think it is equally as important as what we're trying to do for women with Prosper to bring in other genders and to incorporate those ideas and listen to those questions and have those responsive, those conversations. And I feel a huge responsibility to do that, because at the end of the day, I 100% echo what you said. It is not us versus them. It is we, and we have to move together in order for things to change. And I think the only way to do that is open dialogue, honest questions. And I tell the men in our circles all the time, I'm like, ask me anything. I'm a wide open book, and I don't have all the answers, but I can try to give you some examples that maybe help make sense. Mm-hmm. They're little. They're not these huge, awful experiences. They're just little things that just add up and add up and add up. And there's some positive things. Like, you know, I did have to ask for help as a new faculty member at Stanford. I was not we were struggling as a female in my marriage, etc. And I went in to ask my chairman for something that I never thought he would say yes to. I actually went in and said, I'm resigning. Like, I can't do this. You know, we're going to move, etc. And he looked at me, and he's like, well, what do you need? And I told him, and he's like, oh, we'll give you 2 weeks. And I was like, Lord, that's all. I mean, literally, I came home and my husband was like, well, what'd he say? I'm like, and I told him, and he's like, well, that's not expected. I'm like, no. And so again, like, we don't know what other people are going to say, but like, there was a huge ally for me, which I would have never known unless he gave me the room to ask.
Yep.
And totally sat down and he said, what do you need?
Right.
What I need. And this is what I'm willing to give in return. So like, at the end, I walked out working more hours than I did walking into that conversation, but it was hours my family could handle with a little more consistency in my world, which was really inconsistent. And so I was like, that's what I need. I need to know when I come home at the end of the day, I've stayed home. He's like, I can do that. Okay. And so it was such a reaffirming experience.
Yeah. To your point, though, I love what you said, is like, he helped provide that safe space in which, you know, he asked the question, invited you. And I'm sure that one experience was like, to your point earlier, you had that experience. You were like, oh, I can do this. I can ask. I can speak up like this. And then that just starts, you know, that shows you can continue to do that. So that's such a great example. And thank you for sharing transparently. One thing I do want to make sure I pause and acknowledge, which I've heard you do a couple times in a really positive way, is talk about other genders. And I think that through this conversation, I probably sounded more traditional in the sense of gender and being the women men thing. But I do acknowledge and really appreciate, as you talked about it here and some of the materials that I've heard you or that I've seen, really, you are taking an inclusive approach to gender inclusivity. That was redundant. But anyway, I just wanted to note it. I think it's really important.
Yeah. And I think it's really, you know, I will admit I am not a gender specialist, and it is challenging.
Right.
And I think, you know, and when we were designing Prosper, so to backtrack and give the quick version, you know, Prosper was born from a group of really, really remarkable women who have all gone through this life saying we are not addressing the needs of 51-2% of the population now. And that we do all of these events and we are speaking either not recognizing gender, which is fine in a lot of circumstances, or we're speaking to the men in the room. And we said, we have this powerful group of women that have had such amazing life experiences. We owe it to give back. And that's kind of how Prosper was born. We owe it to address the 50% of the population that is not being addressed in these conversations. And with that, so we are balancing, and I will admit I sometimes struggle here, because there is Prosper, you know, we recognize women, whoever identifies as a woman, we see you and we support you. We are talking about some things that are based in female physiology and biology. Mm-hmm. And so there are some technical points that are challenging.
Right.
And we try to identify those. You know, I think that as poor as the research is for women, it's almost non-existent in the transgender population. And so I hope that if we can help increase research for women, you know, everything kind of just follows, then hopefully we can increase a lot of this research so we can have more educated conversations about the impacts of this type of training and programming for all genders.
Yeah, yeah. I think like just the effort, the sincere, authentic effort at that space matters. And I think that because so much is new in the space, or at least newly being talked about and newly being integrated, I think there's some grace to be had in, you know, in saying, as you did, like, I'm not an expert related to that. And I'm also building this foundation to be inclusive and to have a, you know, the ripple effect in a positive way. So I just want to make sure to acknowledge that.
Thank you.
But I want to go back for a minute, because talk to us about what are your offerings. So hearing for the audience, hearing you talk about all this amazing work that you're doing across genders, you've mentioned some sports organization, you've mentioned companies, individuals. So like, first of all, for people in the audience, are you a service and offering for individuals, for companies, for sports teams? So how do we think about that part?
Well, so Prosper is designed to bring human performance, holistic performance focused on women, to organizations, teams, mm-hmm. and the individuals in those organizations. Okay. So we are currently targeting the corporate world, and that is looking a little bit differently. We're trying to help more design programming that can be offered to any new hire, regardless of gender, but that is there to discuss issues and do some education around women and the challenges women face in those environments. And then equally working with the C-suite and leadership of those organizations to make sure that what we are offering as foundational principles are really supported within those organizations, so that it's recognized that these are really important issues, that the culture is, if it's not initially supportive, is making active decisions to try to enhance the experience of women. So our kind of tagline is to help attract, develop, and retain female talent. There's this huge dropout of women at leadership levels, and it costs organizations a ton of money to replace them. And so why is that happening? And can we help organizations identify some of those obstacles that women, when they get to a certain level, are facing, and why they're choosing to leave versus stay? And so that's kind of our corporate strategy. Into sports, it's similar. You know, again, these female athletes, you know, women's professional sports is exploding, which is awesome. And the support for women's professional sports and collegiate sports is exploding. And that is, it's so cool to watch. But again, the problems with abuse and lack of identification and training and lack of identification of issues. And they're new issues. You know, people can't plan for this. You know, you look at all the world women going to the World Cup, and how many of our, you know, star players now have children. And so how do you plan for that? How do you provide support for that? So the landscape is changing, and to help organizations understand there are different sets of boundaries, and there are different complicating factors that need to be considered. And so not only helping the women have some foundational principles about this is how to be optimal now, and their teams are really good at that, but this is how to be optimal in the next phase of your life. So let's talk about that now. And so when your playing days are over, it's time to transition, you have a skill set. And then again, going into the front office of these organizations, really helping the leadership say, we support this. We support our players. We support, we have a culture designed that is directed towards women. And then we're also doing some work in healthcare. Again, there's a huge fallout. You know, 70% of managers in healthcare are women, and 13% are in the C-suite.
Oh.
So there's this huge fallout of women in leadership. And, you know, there's a huge loss of women in the healthcare field, especially. And so helping the women, again, have some foundational principles, resiliency training, mindset training to fall back on, but then helping the organization to understand why these things are happening and to, again, shift the culture that it is not helpful to have yoga at noon for most of your population in a hospital. Like, they don't just walk away from what they're doing to go do 30 minutes of mindfulness in the middle of the day. You know, that's not the way it's set up. So how can we work within those structures and in those environments to get the support they need?
Oh, nice. Yeah. Thank you for describing all of that. Super, super helpful. And I love how you gave us the different examples too, so that we can really think about how you can create that impact in, you know, again, many different, call them arenas. So are your offerings, it sounds like your offerings are basically like bespoke programs that you go in, and there's some consultative work. So tell us, just so that our audience also can think about, like, okay, what does it actually look like to work with Prosper?
Absolutely. So it can look differently, which is kind of fun, but yet challenging to explain. So I think, you know, if an individual wanted to come and work with us, we would absolutely want to help. And we do kind of have another branch of this that is really targeted towards individual women, where we come in and do just kind of a deep dive into where they are and what they want. And we have, our team consists of myself, who has a medical and performance background. And then we have a psychologist, Andrew Whelan, as our sports psychologist, but former Olympian. Does a lot with mindset, a lot with wellness. Rachel Vickery, who does, she's a former gymnast and has done a lot. She's a respiratory physiotherapist and does a lot with arousal state control and performing under pressure. And so we can approach problems very differently, and we do it in a very collaborative way. And then our two other partners that are helping us are Tina Murray, who has a long history in performance and professional sport, and Karen Schaefer, who is a former high military intelligence operative and has done a lot of work in the government. So we can come in and kind of do a deep dive into what goals are and where people want to go, and then help them on kind of all of those different aspects of performance. So we can help with the physical, the social, the emotional, the cognitive, all of that, help them create a roadmap of where they want to go to. And then with teams and organizations, it's done more. We have some pre-made curriculums that we can license and provide to organizations. And then we can come in and do some more bespoke retreats and programming on top of that. So the curriculum is designed to create a foundational language. And then for people that want to go deeper, then we kind of customize their experiences and what that looks like.
Nice. That's amazing. And you do some speaking as well, right?
Yes. Yep. So we've done talks for U.S. Ski and Snowboard, done talks for different organizations that just want more information on what we're trying to do. And even, you know, it's funny, my last talk was for a men's group, just talking about kind of span and performance and what that means, and comparing and contrasting the difference between men and women. And this was talking to a men's group, and so absolutely. And our whole team does speaking, and our whole team does kind of individual work, and then we come together to put some team events on.
Yeah, that's amazing. I kind of put an exclamation on that because I've been doing a lot of reading about there's actually more of a need and people looking for female speakers. And I think so. I just wanted to pause and make sure the audience knows that you and your team members are available in that capacity. And everybody got to hear sort of the overall philosophy, but also different sectors that people bring to the table. So you are doing such amazing work. I'm so grateful to know you, and I know you and I have talked about different ways that we're able to collaborate, and I so appreciate you coming on the show and sharing all of it with us.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Thank you for your support. I feel like in the last several months, I've met more people that I feel like I have been lifelong friends with, and you are definitely on that list. And so I'm just so excited. Anytime we get to sit down and spend an hour together, it's like the highlight of my day. So thank you.
So likewise, thank you. So everybody, please check out Prosper. Follow Jen on LinkedIn and continue to see all the amazing things that they're doing. And I will do my best to keep you all abreast of what they're up to as well. So thanks so much. Have a great day, everybody.